south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, back in the saddle again. Now, in the last show, I mentioned I might not be doing a live show today, being that it's New Year's weekend and all, but things change, and here I am. So how about we start with a little boots on the ground story? Yesterday, I went to go pay my health care insurance for the year. That's what I do, you know, I pay the insurance yearly because then I get a 20% discount. And, you know, I'm one of those guys who rarely uses anything but cash, only when I'm forced to use a credit card, like when you have to buy something on the internet. That's pretty much the only time when plastic comes into play in my life, besides using plastic to pull money out of an ATM machine. Even when I check into a hotel, I try to give them a cash deposit. Most will take cash, believe it or not. $100 or $200, put it in an envelope, stick it in the cash register, and when you leave, they give you the envelope back. That's happened to me countless times. But you have to mention it when they ask for your credit card. They're not going to offer it up. Anyway, coincidentally, my health insurance policy just happens to renew or expire if you don't pay it every year in early January. By the way, with most plans, if you pay up the whole year, you get a 10 or 20% discount. If you pay half the year, you get a 5 or 10% discount, depending on the policy. Or you can pay it monthly like 99.9% of Latinos do, because they don't have the upfront cash to pay for a year or a half year. Which is why insurance companies here offer such a nice discount if you pay cash, because almost no one does, and they really would like you to. Why? Well, because, as one Latino insurance broker told me, Latinos are not prompt payers. Ask any landlord. That means companies are forever sending out notices, emails, and text messages saying, if you don't pay by so-and-so date, we're going to cut you off the insurance policy. You wouldn't believe how many people wait till the very last week, hour, or even minute to finally cough up the dough. In fact, the insurance broker told me that companies have whole departments and call centers devoted to prompting, even haranguing people into keeping up with their payments. They're always trying to get you to sign up for the monthly withdrawal of that fee from your bank account. Then they absolutely know they're going to get the dough. Even so, a lot of Latinos' bank accounts are tapped out, and there's not even enough to cover a monthly payment. Because, you know, as he said, there are so many people that end up going to the hospital, having an accident, whatever. They whip out their insurance card, and the lady at the payment desk gives them the bad news that the policy has lapsed. You can't believe how common that is. And then the ostensibly insured party will act surprised and dumbfounded, even insulted, saying things, you know, like, that can't be right. It must be a clerical error. I sent the check last month. Hey, I've seen that scene play out a couple of times already. It's always amusing and a little unsettling to watch it play out while you're sitting at the doctor's office in the waiting room. You know, where the guy or gal in front of you has to deal with the fact that his insurance has lapsed. Believe me, you don't want to be that guy, especially when medical insurance here in Latin America is so damn cheap. There's just no excuse not to keep up with the payments, and as for me, I like to keep things simple and uncomplicated, so I pay a year at a time. Besides that, I absolutely hate the mechanism where you could get automatic payment withdrawals monthly. I just don't want to put my data or information online or have any bank or payment outfit having access to my data either. That's why, as for me, more than 95% of my transactions are in cash. So anyway, yesterday I drove to the big insurance office, where naturally there was a guy at the door with one of those temperature pistols, and when he pointed it at me, I took my finger and pointed it at his face like a gun. You know how you can simulate a gun with your hand and fingers. And usually they just kind of chuckle and smile because they don't know what else to do. You ought to try it sometime. It really reinforces the idiocy of it all. My advice, next time someone points one of those thermal pistols at you, give it right back to him with your simulated hand gesture gun. And you know, since I've been doing that for a couple of months now anyway, it kind of turns the whole situation around. Instead of you being on the receiving end and the guy with the pistol pulling an authoritarian power move, you've kind of made him look foolish. And better yet, there's usually people around him. When they see what you did, they usually chuckle and give you the thumbs up. Oh, and these guys are always carrying a bottle of that liquid snot goop. And when they shove that in my personal space, I'll almost always say, no thanks, no gracias. I have enough of my own snot, thank you. Tengo mis propios mocos, gracias. By the way, the Spanish word for snot, Moco, M-O-C-O, or Mocos. Oh, and here's the best part, probably the part you've been waiting for. My yearly health insurance premium? $800. Nope, not $800 a month, $800 a year. If I had paid by the month, it would have been a grand, but remember, I got 20% off. Oh, and did I tell you it's got a $250 yearly deductible? What's yours? By the way, the health insurance company I'm with has something like 5 plans. You know, you've got basic, good, better, best, and deluxe. I'm not on the premium or platinum plan. That's plan number 5. I'm on the one below that, the gold plan. One level from the top, plan number 4. The difference being, the premium plan has worldwide coverage. I'm on the plan that covers me throughout Latin America. The difference in price, now, I'm a single on that plan. It's $800 for my plan, and if I had the absolute maximum platinum plan, it would cost me around $1,200 to $1,400 a year. And the only thing I would gain is worldwide coverage. And one more thing, with the plan I'm on, if I go see a doctor or a specialist, it costs me $25 out of my pocket. And if I was to have the platinum plan, you know, $1,200 or $1,300 a year, I'd have no out-of-pocket costs for office calls. So that's the basic difference between having the platinum plan and the one right under it, the gold plan. Oh, and it's an 80-20 plan, too. So I pay 20% of hospital and lab. But if I go to their registered hospitals, clinics, and labs, it's 90-10. I only pay 10%. And as for the other three plans, the cheaper plans, I mean, really, what gringo in his right mind would want to downgrade his coverage when you could get a fantastic plan for $800 a year? Oh, and for your information, a very basic raw plan with this company is around $300 a year. And this is important. It's one of those plans where the cutoff age is 64. So if you're 65, you're SOL. You can't get on the policy. But if you're younger than that and you get on the plan, you got full coverage till age 99. I know you're thinking, then what? Well, I guess when you hit 100, you're on your own and they throw your wheelchair under the bus. I don't know. I'm not looking that far ahead. Oh, and one more thing. When I walked into that insurance office, you take a number and you look up at a TV screen to see when they're going to call you to the payment or service window. Well, while sitting there waiting, I noticed there wasn't a single indigenous person or ragtag kind of low-income person there at all. In other words, it was the upper 5 or 10% of Latinos. Did I mention, surprise, surprise, I was the only gringo in the place? And the parking lot was full of pretty nice cars, and no one there, believe me, no one, was what you might consider poor or lower middle class. Which, once again, proves the fact that only people of ways and means buy private health insurance in Latin America. And the rest, the other 80 to 90% of the population, are covered by their absolutely horrific national health care plans. Though it is true down here in Latin America, if you happen to work on the books at a fairly decent-sized company, or even McDonald's, Burger King, Taco Bell, or Starbucks, your employer will provide some kind of basic private health care insurance as a benefit. And it'll almost always be the basic plan I had mentioned earlier. But still, no matter how basic it is, it's still 1,000% better than having to rely on the pathetic but free national health care plan. Hey, you get what you pay for. That includes this show. All right, changing gears. And now, from the useless and idiotic redundancy department, well, there's something you'll notice right away if you're shopping at a Latin American supermarket or a tienda. Suppose you picked up a jar of peanut butter. Let's say you're in a big box store like Costco, where most stuff is imported, and that jar of peanut butter is Planters, a well-known brand. And now you want to know exactly what's in that stuff, so you check out the label. Suddenly, you realize there's 2 ingredient labels on it. The original one from the manufacturer in English, and kind of a crooked makeshift slapdash label that's been stuck on listing all the ingredients in Spanish. So you're thinking, well, that's okay, because I guess people who don't speak English, Latinos who are in the store, they have to know what kind of ingredients there are in the thing, right? Well, not really. It's sort of pointless. You know, in all the years I've been down here, I've never, ever seen a Latino read a label. I mean, hell, 99% of gringos and first world people don't read labels. Which makes you wonder, why would someone go through the trouble of printing a label in Spanish and sticking it on every jar, package, and can in the entire supermarket? Besides the fact that no one reads labels down here. Secondly, any locals who produce a product for sale, let's say honey, candy, sweets, or baked goods. By the way, you'll see a lot of that locally produced homemade stuff when you go into a corner store. You know, selling homemade stuff locally is big business down here. Though you'll almost never see a label that formally lists the ingredients. A lot of local edible mystery products down here. As for me, I tend to avoid that stuff. Picture Latin America, especially in the small towns and out in the boonies, as a giant co-op or your grandma's or a church bake sale. Though I understand in the States now you gotta get permits for everything. You can't even have a frickin' lemonade stand. I mean, really, isn't that reason 2,476 why it's time to get the hell out of Dodge? But I digress, as usual. So anyway, you got this big double standard here in Latin America. Well, there's lots of double standards, but this one's about labeling food. Of course, if you're a big food producer or processor, producing milk, cheese, cereals, packaged goods, whatever, that are going into the big supermarkets, they'll have decent food ingredient labels on them. But here's the thing, and it's important to remember. If you as a gringo or expat want to sell a particular, let's say, boutique food item within the Latin American country you're living in, you won't have to go through any kind of government regulation process. You won't have to get the items analyzed in a lab for content and apply for all kinds of idiotic and redundant permits. Now, of course, if you're going to export stuff, that's a different thing. Then you're at the mercy of the country you're exporting to. But here's the thing. Some years back, Latin American governments inadvertently stumbled upon another cash cow. They realized there was a big demand for imported food products. More and more every year, because Latinos love everything first world, and there's more and more gringos piling in. Usually brand name stuff that can't be made here in Latin America, or just wasn't practical to do so. Like, for example, Planters peanut butter. Planters is not going to come down to Nicaragua and open up a plant, because there's just not the demand. Oh, you can find that stuff, all right, in any medium and large-sized Latin city, any city that has a Walmart or a Costco. The biggest single employer in Latin America is Walmart. There are thousands of them down here. So, as it turns out, Latin governments, in the interest of gouging food importers, they all decided some years back that in order for you to import and sell a jar of Planters peanut butter, a sample of that peanut butter had to go first to that government's certified chemical laboratory and get a complete assay to determine the ingredients that you see already printed on the label. So, for example, you look at a peanut butter label. It'll say contains peanuts, peanut oil, salt, and unfortunately, if it's not labeled completely natural peanut butter, it'll have sugar, probably high fructose corn syrup, soybean oil or palm oil in it, which is terrible for you and disgusting, but that's the way things are because people don't like a coating of peanut oil floating on the top of the jar, the kind of separation you get with real natural peanut butter. And then, of course, you've got the preservatives and additives and emulsifiers. Bottom line, Latin American governments force imported food product companies to have all their products analyzed in a Latino laboratory in that country to make sure the ingredients are as listed. Now, as stupid, repetitive, and idiotic as that sounds, it's not at all about demonstrating what's in the stuff and producing a label in Spanish. It's about food companies exporting their stuff and forking over dough to a corrupt, lard-ass government to repeat a process that's already been completely vetted up in the States, or they wouldn't be able to sell that stuff in supermarkets in Milwaukee, Cleveland, and New Jersey. It's just a money-making scheme for lard-ass Latin American governments. Of course, the U.S. government more than qualifies in that respect, too, but you knew that already. Now, of course, going through that process automatically increases the cost of any imported item to a Latin American country. Those costs are passed on to the consumer. It's one of the reasons why imported products are so much more expensive than the local ones. For example, locally produced peanut butter, $4, and the Planters peanut butter, same size, $5 or $6. Is it any better tasting or better for you? No. Certainly with all those additives and sugar, it's actually bad for you. Now, of course, we know all governments are on an eternal quest to extract more and more money out of the masses. And this double analysis, double labeling thing is a perfect example of this because the obvious, best, most efficient, and cheapest solution to sell a food product that's been imported would be just to request the lab analysis done up in the States and just translate that analysis into Spanish, then just print out that ingredient label and stick it on the jar. A lot of people don't speak English, and you'll need that label in Spanish just in case 1 in 6 million Latinos might want to read it. But no, by law, there has to be a 100% redundant process verifying every ingredient on the label, or the Latin government won't give you a sanitation permit to sell your stuff there. Meanwhile, as mentioned before, across the street from that supermarket, you've got maybe 6 or 7 mom-and-pop tiendas selling dozens of varieties of homemade stuff, baked goods, honey, candy, snacks, you name it. with no lab analysis or sanitary certification process at all. So what do you make of that? Can you say Montezuma's Revenge? So here's the conundrum. Latin Americans love everything there is about the First World. They adopt and copy everything too. Always with a little lag time, that's to be expected. But somehow they won't accept a complete chemical analysis of a food product done in a certified lab up in the States. Why? Because it's all about the money, all about the gouge. And governments, only governments, can get away with that. Enough said about that. Way too much said about that. Which brings us to an email. This one's from Dave. Man, do Daves like to listen to this show. Anyway, he says, good morning, Johnny. When you get a chance, can you please touch on the subject of internet services in Latin America? The availability, upload, download, speed, and prices, etc. As always, the very best, Dave. All right, Dave, you know, that's one of the questions I get asked most often. Because, as we all know, people live, breathe, work, and die on the internet these days. So, if they don't have a nice, solid, fast connection, they're in a world of hurt. And naturally, most gonna-bes and wannabes who've probably never been down to Latin America think of it as a kind of backwoods, old-fashioned kind of place where technology is just not up to snuff. Well, Dave, I'll tell you, the only places in Latin America that technology is not up to snuff, not up to first world standards, is Cuba, Venezuela, and certain places way out in the boonies where you rarely see neither man nor beast. So what it boils down to is this. Aside from those previously mentioned socialist nightmare countries, in whatever Latin American country you choose to live in, you'll have two, three, even four large, usually transnational, internet providers to choose from. Some of the big ones are Movistar, Tigo, Claro, Telefonica, Viva, and a handful of others. And as for the best or cheapest or fastest service to use, don't ask another gringo. Ask your lawyer or a Latino businessman or a businesswoman that you know. And as far as cost and speeds, well, again, you get what you pay for. They've got very high-speed internet down here, just like you have up in the States. And if you want the real high-performance internet, you know, the one you have at your laptop at home and you pay extra for through the internet provider, you could be looking at $100 a month. Whereas pretty much throughout Latin America, your average internet speed, that would be download speed, on your cell phone, not your laptop at home, talking about your cell phone now, is around 10 megabits per second. Now, of course, most people don't do business on their cell phones, maybe partially so, but they've got a laptop set up at home or in their office, whatever, and they contact a big internet provider like Claro, for example, and they buy a 20, 30, 40, even 50 megabit per second plan, with some plans up to 100 megabits per second. In fact, Claro in Guatemala has a 100 megabit per second plan for around $100 a month. Of course, you're not going to get that with your cell phone, only at your house or business. Now, as far as Central America, and for all you guys and gals who are going to relocate to Guatemala or parts nearby, my seminar logistics lady, Rita, knows all about those internet plans. So if you need some precise, detailed information, just contact her. In fact, if you come on down to Guatemala, she'll handhold you through it. Take it down to Claro, Tigo, Movistar, whatever, and get you set up. By the way, that's one of the big benefits of coming down to the Expat Insider Seminar. You get to meet my group, my network, and from then on, they'll be your friends and contacts and available to answer your questions. And believe me, you'll have questions. And again, it depends on where you live, what service you want to select. For example, as for Guatemala again, if you're in Guatemala City, Antigua, or Lake Atitlan, you might want to select Claro. But if you're out in the boonies, you might want to select Tigo. Why? Because it's got more cell tower coverage out in the boonies, and Claro's got more cell tower coverage in the cities. Again, if you're thinking about Guatemala or parts nearby, check with Rita. She's the answer lady. Oh, and here's a little boots-on-the-ground example I think you'll like. Now, you longtime listeners have heard me talk about Bitcoin Dan. He came down to one of my very first Expat Insider seminars 9 years ago, I think now. Well, he came down with his new wife and never left. He set up shop and started a business. He's even got two kids now, born in Guatemala. And the interesting part? Well, listen to this. Bitcoin Dan operates his internet business out of his house in a gated, guarded community. He's got an extremely successful internet business. You'll hear more about it if you come to the seminar. It's so popular worldwide that he's got 3 million customers. And like I said, he works out of a little office in his house, operating his business entirely from there. Here's the kicker. He services 3 million customers through his basic household internet plan from Claro. And believe me, a guy like Dan with 3 million clients needs to have his internet rock solid and fast. So for all you guys and gals out there who are thinking, well, it might be difficult to start a business in Honduras, Guatemala, Panama, wherever, because I'm not so sure about the quality or reliability of the internet. Think about that for a second. Dan has been running that business ever since he moved into that house, at least 7 years ago now. And he never had to buy anything more than the plans offered through Claro for regular home service. He didn't have to have something special or custom installed. He didn't have to have a dedicated fiber optic line, none of that. So think about that if you've got any doubts about running a business once you get down here to Latin America and having to depend on good, solid internet service. Oh, and for those of you coming down to my Expat Insider Seminar, you'll meet Dan, Captain Mango, Oscar Miner, and our cast of characters. They'll be hanging with us, and they'll be talking at the seminar, too, about their specialties. So if you do have any questions about the internet or anything else, you'll be able to meet those people and get to know them personally, have lunch and dinner, and hang with them a bit. You'll have plenty of time to fire any and all questions at them. All right, speaking of expats and gringos doing business here in Latin America, comes this email from Anthony in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C., the viper's nest. By the way, our good friend Expat Eddie has always had this pipe dream. He's brought it up to me a number of times. He brings up the fact that the easiest and cleanest and simplest way to completely reverse the terrible course that the U.S. is on is for the president to call a mandatory emergency session of Congress. And then someone walks in and accidentally sets off a small nuclear device. Now, that, Eddie says, and I agree with him, would certainly eliminate 454 of the world's worst swamp creatures, wouldn't it? Oh, and let's not forget to invite the Bushes, Obamas, the Clintons, and all the Federal Reserve chairmen to that party. Now, of course, that'll never happen. But you can always daydream. Then again, there is a law against practically everything. I mean, just look at that book, Three Felonies a Day. So as far as outlawing wishful thinking and daydreaming, I'm sure they're working on it. Hey, imagine a Hollywood movie with that plot. And our hero, whether it be Denzel, Liam Neeson, Arnie, whoever, imagine he screws up and doesn't disarm the bomb on time. You know, these days, most people would call that a happy ending. But I digress again. Sorry about that. Anyway, Anthony from DC writes, I'm new to your podcast, Johnny. Loving them so far. I'm starting the Expat Files shows from the beginning, and I'm on April of 2011 so far. I recognize that some of what you said way back when may be out of date now, but of course, much of it isn't. I find all of your podcasts entertaining and informative. Here's my question. Wouldn't Latin Americans take hostile views towards expats starting competing businesses in their own towns? On your April 6th podcast of 2011, when Expats Go Into Business Part 1, you advise that it's often better for expats to find business opportunities by walking around towns off the tourist trails and checking out some of the existing businesses instead of those cliched hospitality businesses expats often start in tourist towns. Of course, the quality of these local businesses that you're purveying are often poor. So that means there are strong opportunities for expats to bring their first world knowledge and experience. This sounds tempting, but I would think the locals wouldn't take too kindly to some gringo inevitably putting them out of business when said gringo launches his competing business that's going to be of better quality right next door or across the street. And Johnny, since I'm still in April of 2011, if you've already answered that question in a future podcast, just let me know where it is and I'll check it out. Happy holidays, Anthony. All right, Anthony, thanks for that. Good question. Matter of fact, Anthony, I know of dozens, if not hundreds, of expats who created businesses down here based on that very formula. They see a business that has clients and is making money, yet by first world standard, it's a joke. It's less than second rate. And the first thing you're thinking is, if I was in that business, I'd certainly do this or I'd change that. You're thinking, man, he's doing it all wrong. What an idiot. Because we're looking at the details. We instantly spot the raw edges. Because when we compete with each other up in the States, you better be tip-top and on your toes or you're going to crash and burn. That's the environment we were all brought up in. Even if we don't have a business, we're exposed to so much competition and so many good businesses. We know, us gringos and expats that is, instinctively, what works and what doesn't work and what customers really want. Now, of course, if you build a better mousetrap, your competition is not going to like that you moved in down the block. However, in all the years I've been down here, more than 30 now, I've never seen a Latino competitor enact any kind of vengeance or sabotage, nor have I ever heard any rumors of that. I guess you know if your second or third rate Latino competition just is not into the details, and that's why he's second and third rate, he's not going to be very good at enacting any kind of retribution either. Not that he would, because normally, when a gringo or expat does build the better mousetrap, he doesn't put the competitors out of business. They still exist and chug along. It's just that you become number one in the existing marketplace. Now, let me backtrack a bit. I do know of a few cases of sabotage where gringo businesses have been damaged, but not for the reasons you think. It's almost always, and this is crazy, due to some kind of romantic jealousy going on within the business. Because you know, through rumors and by listening to the show, that Latinos and Latinos are extremely jealous. You know how a bottle of hot peppers sometimes has a temperature gauge on it? Well, if human cultures had a temperature gauge for jealousy, gringos and expats would be in the green, cool side, and Latin Americans would pin the gauge. So yes, I've heard of and know of cases where a jealous husband or boyfriend has sabotaged a gringo's business because he thought his wife or girlfriend was having an affair with the gringo owner or operator. And most often, it's not the case at all. Most gringos and expats are smarter than that. They don't go dipping their pen in the company ink, so to speak. That's way too risky, especially in Latin America, where tempers really flare and can often get violent when it comes to jealousy. So let this be a warning to you. Guys especially, if a Latina worker warms up to you just a bit too much, you better find out if she's got a husband, boyfriend, or ex. Because even if she flirts with you and you don't reciprocate at all, you could be in for trouble. Now, you longtime listeners remember me telling the story of a friend of mine who in Antigua, Guatemala, had a very nice custom pillow and bedspread factory with about a dozen or so young employees, Latinas and indigenous ladies, making beautiful bedspreads, linens, and pillows and rugs. And one day, the jealous boyfriend of one of those young ladies burnt his place down, torched it. They even got him on camera doing it. Why? Because he thought his girlfriend was having an affair with the gringo owner. Actually, he was a European, a German guy. Practically a gringo, you know. The kicker was he was totally clueless of the storm that was brewing behind his back. He never put a move on her, nor did he reciprocate. Treated her nice like he did everyone else. But she obviously told someone or telegraphed to someone the wrong message. The boyfriend surely caught on and went a little nuts one night, got drunk, went over and torched the place. So anyway, especially you expat gringo guys, keep that in mind if you're hiring local Latinas. Oh, and I've got a couple of other stories like that involving gringo businessmen. Just remind me and I'll lay another wild story like that on you next week.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. Y no Spanish language.